listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 250 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we'll be discussing some social media marketing hacks and tips and things you can do to, you know, just make your social media efforts go further and fine-tune them a bit. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing great. I just put out a new single today, so, you know, I'm in promotion mode, and to promote the song, I am trying something for the first time that we'll talk about later in this discussion.
Oh,
which also excellent. Means I have no idea whether it works or not because I'm just did it today. So,
but you're trying.
I'm
That's
trying.
That's the important thing, Chris. Right. You're trying new things, testing.
That's really what my music career is about. I just want the participation trophy in every aspect of a music career.
There you go. So that means you're refreshing the Spotify for Artists app every 5 minutes because the first week of releases out, it updates in real time.
Yep. And I looked at it at midnight and I was like, oh, 8 people are listening to my song, which is, I don't know, depressing and also kind of cool that like on the minute it was out, some folks were hearing it.
I don't think that's depressing.
No?
No. The highest I've ever seen on the listening right now stat for us, I think was like 25. But you break that up over the course of a day, that's like at that moment.
Yeah. That, you know, when you put that spin on it, I feel a lot better now.
We're marketing people. We put spin on everything.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We've got a new song coming up. It's getting mastered and working on a little release plan. So we'll talk about that when the time comes. But we have to acknowledge that this is our 250th episode.
Whoa.
And that's a quarter of a way to 1,000. When we started this, we thought we wouldn't get past 10 episodes, and most podcasts don't.
But then on the other hand, we did record like 100 episodes in a matter of, what, 2 or 3 years? And then it's taken us another 10 years to get the other 150 done.
It was probably 3 or 4 for that first 100 or so. But you know what? We still put out more podcast episodes. The average podcast now is doing like, oh, it's a season. We've got 8 episodes. I'm like, what? This isn't TV.
Right, that's true.
So we've been averaging still way more than the average podcast that is out there that people are putting effort behind. We're doing well. This is like our 5th for the year already. We're way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we're doing good. Actually, someone posted, who was it, Paul Jackson? I forget. Posted an Instagram story saying like, whoa, you guys are spoiling us because there's been 3 episodes in 8 days. And I just kind of reposted the story and said, haha, don't get used to it or something like that. But it's like, whoa, hey, yeah, we have been productive.
We're on a roll. We've got good ideas. We're in the flow right now. And so we're trying to take advantage of it. And so, yeah, I think we've got a good episode today. We've got, I think, some really good, easy social marketing tips and hacks that we'll discuss. And, of course, we have a lot of great calls and questions from email that we'll get into later in the show. Before we get to that, though, Chris, we have to mention it is go time for buying your ticket to the DIY Musician Conference, whether you're going to the one in Valencia, May 30th and 31st, or if you're going to the one in August 28th through 30th. It's time to get your tickets. Early bird pricing is live and won't last for much longer. And as it gets closer, the price for the ticket keeps going up. And if you're going to Austin, you definitely want to snag your hotel room as soon as possible because the hotel block, which is a good discount, sold out last year. And so you want to get on that.
Right. And so the deadline is February 26th, I believe, for the U.S. conference. I forget what it is for Valencia. Is it the 28th?
I forget. But, you know, people listen to this podcast whenever. And so the point is, when you hear this, go to DIYMusicianCon.com and get your ticket. The sooner the better. And one thing to highlight about Valencia, and this should be very exciting. I know there's already a big group that have been talking about the conference in Valencia on Facebook. Tom Jackson coming to do a live band makeover in Valencia.
Oh, he's crossing the ocean to do his...
Crossing the ocean. We've not done this in Europe before, and I don't know that he's ever done it in Europe. I know he's worked with some artists overseas, but I don't know that he's ever done the live band makeover. So if you are in the Europe area, it's a screaming deal just to come see that. The tickets are cheap. So
that's
be
awesome.
There.
And is he going to be on the sort of the big stage that we do most of the stuff
yes.
on?
Yes. Nice. Yes. We're okay. We're changing up the schedule a little bit this year, and we have the big opera house for both days, which is giving us some flexibility to use spaces differently and not have everybody in that one giant room all day on Saturday and then just dispersed in the smaller rooms on Sunday. So lots of programming changes and excitement around Valencia. And again, you have my guarantee, the sun will be shining. And right now, being here in Portland, Oregon, that sounds amazing. And it won't be cold in Austin either. Both places, you probably won't need a jacket. So go to DIYMusicianCon.com. We're still in winter. We're all cold. Let's get our tickets to someplace warm, and we can all be there together and have an amazing time and move our careers forward. How about that, Chris?
Sounds great. Let's do it.
So this episode of the podcast about doing like social media hacks or quick tips really came about from some of my own experimentation. I know some of the experimentation you've been doing, Chris, but we also get a lot of questions on the show about what you can do to just get started or to get a further reach on social media. And so a lot of these things are things that are tips that everyone should know, or some of them are things that we've just sort of figured out, you know, because a lot of these things are driven by algorithms and they're constantly shifting and changing. So some of these things may work for a short time and then they may not. But so some of these are just observations I've made from a lot of the marketing I've done for our band and what we've seen marketing CD Baby. And just some of them are, you know, sort of tried and true quick tips. But, you know, again, the question we get a lot on the show is, how can I just get started building a following on social media, or how can I improve what I'm doing or make it reach further? And so these are really geared around that. And we're going to focus on what I will say are the big three plus one, the plus one being TikTok, but the big three being Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And really, while we're focusing on those, is because those are really the biggest open platforms. They are open social platforms. You know, YouTube's sort of its own different thing now. You could say it's a social platform, but it's really a video platform the way it's evolved. And that deserves its own time and energy to discuss. So anything you want to add, Chris, before we dive in?
No, I'm good to jump in.
All right. So we're going to start with a few quick tips related to Twitter. And my number one is, and it has an A and B. One is follow other artists that are popular in your genre and artists that are in your local scene. And then the B part is like tweets by fans that are replying to their tweets. And this will result in some of those people following you back. So you can follow these fans, but liking a tweet often gets the same result in that a lot of times people will see, oh, who liked my tweet? And then they'll see that you're banned and they'll follow you, without having to go just follow a bunch of people. So when people go to your account, it's like you're following 10,000 people and there's 50 following you. It looks really weird and unbalanced, and makes it feel like nobody likes you. So that's one little quick tip that I've noticed works really well.
I know that the point of this discussion is to do some rapid fire tips, but I do have some soul searching questions for you on a few of these.
And one is
the follower to follow imbalance that you're talking about. So I went through, I don't know, 8 or 10 years of my Twitter habits being very polite and being a good boy that, and following people back so that they would feel seen and respected or whatever, you know, it just seemed like the good reciprocal thing to do. And, you know, then I realized, like, I actually only really like look at 50 people's tweets, and generally, I don't know. So now I'm in this thing where I'm like, what do you do when you're in that spot? Do you then go and unfollow everyone that you actually don't really care about? Or like, cause then I think that would seem sort of proactively rude. I've been following these people in theory.
Well, you can, and there's a tool that helps you to do that in bulk that I've seen. It's more a matter of when someone like sees a new account. This is my opinion on where I was coming from. When someone sees a new account and like, oh, this person liked my tweet, who is it? And they look at it and you've got 10,000 people you're following and 50 are following you. It looks kind of like a bot or spammy. Really, I think it's more there's so many bots out there or people that program these things. So it follows all these people and tries to build an audience that way. And that's what I'm trying to avoid, the appearance of like, I want people to look at it and go, oh, this is a legitimate thing. And that imbalance can cause that feeling. Now, as far as like people you're not following, the algorithm on Twitter is actually going to favor the people that you're interacting with. My biggest complaint about Twitter, and this impacts one of the tips, that my next one, is that it used to be so chronological, which made it an amazing platform. The thing where Twitter hands down ruled was when current events, topics, events were happening, everyone was on Twitter, and that was a great place to, you know, see what people were saying. It doesn't work that way anymore, and it's frustrating because, like, during the Super Bowl, instead of seeing everyone tweeting about the Super Bowl coming down my feed, I saw maybe one or two, but I actually had to go to the hashtag to see everyone, you know, chatting about the Super Bowl. So my number two tip is hashtags are topic and event driven on Twitter. Think about what is happening or going to happen and how you can inject your music into the story. And, you know, that's an opportunity, not just like becoming spam, hashtag spam, but is there something you can think of in a way that you can inject yourself in the story? Like I mentioned the Super Bowl, using the hashtag Super Bowl, you know, after the halftime show. It doesn't matter who performs the halftime show. Let's get honest, people. Every year, it doesn't matter who the performance is, half the people saying it was the worst ever, half the people saying it was the best ever. Every year, it doesn't matter.
And half of them are always right.
So get off your high horse. We all know that you hate it because we're smug, or you loved it because I don't know why. But anyway, taking the Super Bowl, it'd be hashed like, what do you think? Do you think our performance here is better than the Super Bowl halftime show? Hashtag Super Bowl, you know, in the link to a video or something like that. That's a way you can inject yourself into a conversation where, you know, current events or things like that are happening. But on Twitter, that's really, I think, the hashtag opportunity. You can use hashtags like just guitar player or whatever. There's other audiences for them, but really the powerful ones are things that are relating to what's really going on, where people still like to go to Twitter and it's a quick form of a feed.
Yeah. Well, and also to play on both the hashtag and the kind of real time, this is happening right now nature of Twitter. You could also point to your listening party you did a few years ago, where like it was an event around the band's music. But it was sort of like, hey, our community is going to do this thing all together on Twitter. And, you know, you can't do a real-time text-based exchange on Instagram or Facebook nearly as well as you can do on Twitter. So even if it's, you know, your album listening party is not the Super Bowl, but there's a similar element to it being current and communal and real-time.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good place to do something communal in real time using a hashtag. So like that listening party we did, we had everybody, we said at 10 a.m. or whatever time it was, we're going to hit play all together. And then we, using this hashtag, as the songs played in real time and everyone was hearing them in real time, you know, on their own stereo or headphones or whatever, we had a bunch of pre-written tweets that gave behind the scenes info, some alternate takes and things like that, videos and behind a lot of behind the scenes information. And it worked really well. Twitter's perfect for that. And that's another good way to think about it. It's a way to have a good communal conversation in real time. And my last tip I had for Twitter was, Twitter is one platform where it's okay to repost the content again, since it's an ongoing feed. So if you post something and you're like, oh, I thought this would be great and I didn't get a response, post it again at a later time. Maybe it's the time that's the problem. You know, your fans, depending on where they are in the world or what time they engage with certain platforms, try it on a different day. It doesn't have to be limited to just one tweet, where with other platforms like Instagram and Facebook, that doesn't really work as well. But Twitter is something that you can repost. And if something is a hit, something works really well, try it again at a different time, because you probably have people that have habits where they look at social media at certain times during the day. You might tap into a completely different audience. Or if you have some people in the US, or you're in Europe and your fans are in Europe and Australia or something, it's like there's time shifting. And so you can Twitter works to your advantage in that case.
Yeah, I just have a few quick things to add to Twitter. One is that daily themes, I think, really help. Sometimes we're just like, oh, crap, I have to post something on Twitter, but I have no idea what to say. Well, if you have kind of organized your life where you have certain themes that you're going to hit, it kind of helps give you a little framework to come up with ideas. And, our friend Matt Wheeler has, I forget what he calls it, but it's sort of like random fact of the day. And it's just true, but also seemingly absurd facts from history and science and stuff. And I think that just gives him, you know, a way to find something interesting and something to say. You could also do like, hey, every morning I get up and have coffee and look at the New York Times and get pissed off. So here's my hot take on something that's infuriating about the world, or what, you know, any kind of theme like that. Another thing is, I guess like a decade ago, there was a lot of talk about how your own identity and your own brand can be wrapped up in sort of the things you curate. It's not just about what you create. So I think it's totally fine on Twitter to make a practice of reposting things that, you know, you want to define yourself as. So like, for a long time I was writing a lot of poetry. So Poetry Daily posts a poem every day. And if I liked the poem, I just automatically retweeted it, and maybe I'd retweet it with some of my own commentary, maybe not, but suddenly like I'm almost, I don't know what the word is, kind of now I'm sort of symbiotically connected to poetry, in the eyes of my audience or something because of what I'm retweeting. So don't be afraid to retweet stuff. Groups are somewhat useful. You know, you can group people together on Twitter by their profession or their, you know, music scene or whatever. So that's kind of a way of simplifying your life in terms of who you're following. And then the last thing I wanted to say is I love takeovers on Twitter. I don't really like them on most other platforms, but it works really well on Twitter. So like Tig Notaro, the comedian, will have people take over the Twitter account for, I don't know, a week or a month or something like that. And I don't know, it's just kind of fun to see what other people do with Tig's account. And I think the same could be true of musicians or songwriters swapping accounts in a way and trying to do something that is unique to the person's voice that has taken over the account, but also shaped in a way where it's spoken to this person's audience.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was concise, but you get my point.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have your mom take over your Twitter account.
That would be horrifying and amazing.
You might lose a lot of fans. You might gain a lot.
Oh, wow. Suddenly, there's just a lot of Fox News.
They're like, man, Chris really fell down a Fox News rabbit hole.
I had no idea he was such a Breitbart fan.
Yeah, that's funny.
Love you, Mom.
Of course, of course. Those are all really, really good ideas. You know, when, again, to thinking about building an audience, Twitter has a lot of different functionality or options. Like you're saying, the themes are a good one. The retweeting. I like the retweeting because it's such an easy way to come off as looking as a curator with doing very little work. So you can build a group around some things that, like you mentioned, poetry. That would be a great idea for, people that are a band called Small Town Poets to have a poetry group that, you know, you can just easily look at. Here's a bunch of feeds about poetry or quotes from poets and things like that. And then retweet poetry on like Wednesday Poetry Day or something like that.
You should also do a Small Town Day, like where you just have random facts and pictures of tiny towns that no one's ever heard of. Except for
these are all great ideas. This is why we do this podcast. It's not for anybody listening. It's just for us.
There you go. Two Twitter themes for you.
There you go. And yeah, that works. I just need to get an intern to program all that. But those are the things that Twitter's great for. Just thinking about some themes, and it's easy to organize and easy to make it happen once you have it organized. And, you know, then you just sort of get in a rhythm of like, oh, you know, whether it's whatever you do in the morning, you know, and you look at social, just go, oh, I need to retweet a few things related to this topic because it's Tuesday or it's Wednesday. So Twitter's good for that. All right. You know what? I forgot to mention a couple things at the top because we started talking about Valencia and sunshine, and I'm in Portland, Oregon, where it's dark and rainy, and I'm in a studio room with no windows. So I just thought of sunshine and I went to a whole nother place. But I wanted to mention a couple things that part of why some of these tips and tricks are helpful and why I've really dug into a lot of them myself with what I do with our band is because, you know, I tell our band that, you know, we're not able to tour a lot. We tour when we can, but we're not the band that's going to go out and play 50, 60, 100 shows a year anymore. And so we really have to think about online opportunities. And so I started telling them that our fans will never be at any one show. They're online. And so trying to think about how anything we do together, that it just becomes this massive content creation event. But we don't necessarily have to use it right then, but just that when we're together, it's incredibly important that we harness that time together to create content and figure out then how to trickle that out online, because that's where our audience really is. They're all over the world online. The other thing is I wanted to mention was understanding where your audience is. It might not be where you want them to be. You know, I was talking to somebody here in the office and they're like, I hate Facebook. There are a lot of people that don't like, you know, depending on what generation you are, you might find that you connect on different platforms, but that might not be where your audience is. I personally love Instagram. I love all the ways you can use it to tell stories. Our audience is on Facebook by and large. And I've had to learn to figure out Facebook and how to drive conversations there, which is very different than Instagram. And I still love Instagram. And that's, you know, we put a lot of effort there, but it's different. And that's where our fans are. And, you know, for a lot of people looking at something like TikTok, they might be thinking, well, I don't know if I have fans there. And it's like, well, that might be an opportunity to, you know, because I've been thinking a lot myself, like, how do I extend our catalog and our new music to a new era of fans? Because it's easy to just talk to the legacy fans that like us for our, you know, first two albums that had lots of success. And so I think those are things to think about when you think about social. Yes, you don't want to overextend yourself and get frustrated because you're like, I'm trying to do everything everywhere. But it's like, you got to pick the platforms that you gravitate to and that you can do well on, but also that your fans might not be where you think they are. So that's something to consider as well.
That's a great point.
Our fans with Small Town Poets are not on Twitter. There's like three. It's like no matter what we've tried Twitter in the past, that listening party was the most successful thing we ever did on Twitter. And I thought, okay, we might get some momentum on Twitter. But man, we go to the Facebook well and we can see an explosion happen. That does not happen for us on Twitter. So we actually don't do much there.
So when you say that, if the listening party was successful, that does mean that your fans have to be on the platform, but maybe they're just, what, not engaging with your stuff there, or they're not there all that much? Like, did they make a special point to go to Twitter for that event?
I think they did. I think, you know, what we did, we emailed our fans and stuff to let them know that that was happening. And also there was some nostalgia involved because it was the anniversary of our second album. Or no, it was the 20th anniversary of our debut album that we did it around. And so there was some nostalgia and the fact that we were going to be releasing a bunch of behind the scenes stuff. And so I think that made people make a special effort to go there, because most people, if they're on social media, a lot of people probably have a Twitter account. That just may not be where they land first. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've discovered that Twitter is not the first place for us to go, but we can just see like crazy stuff happen on Facebook, which is, you know, is something I've had to come to grips with.
Well, I'm glad you have, instead of continuing to resist.
All right, well, let's talk about Instagram. I'll hit a couple quick tips with Instagram. One, if you're trying to tap into a bigger audience and find new fans, you must use hashtags and look at the hashtags others are using and don't abuse them. But Instagram does allow people to follow hashtags, and that has become a popular thing. So there's lots of people like following, for example, guitar player hashtags related to gear, you know, all sorts of recording gear and the gear you might be using to play. There's a lot of people that follow those hashtags and really like engaging in those feeds. So for me, whenever I post a picture of us in the studio or on stage where it's clear, you know, you can see some my guitar or my pedals or any of the other guys in the band, some of their gear, I definitely use hashtags related to that. And it has been a way that we've picked up followers and people interested in what we're doing in engagement, because it's a theme that it relates to, like, oh, this band is using this Moog synthesizer that I really like, and I follow all these people that are using synths. I'll go check out their music. So that is something you should really use.
Yeah, and on the topic, hashtags work in stories as well.
Yes, yes. That was something I had here listed, that don't skip hashtags on stories because they are searchable. And if you look at your, you know, the search, click the search button in Instagram, you will see a bunch and type in something. You will see stories, you'll see regular posts all mixed in. So it does work in there. Another thing about hashtags, you want to think topical. Think about what's in the picture that might relate to a theme people are interested in. It's not just about you. So, for example, we have two Christmas albums. At Christmas time, when we might be doing shows or something, I'll use Christmas hashtags if what's in the image relates to anything about, you know, Christmas, whether it's, you know, we're playing a show and there happens to be some Christmas lighting on the stage or Christmas trees or whatever. And a lot of times that's a way I found, like using hashtags like Christmas music and things, that has been a way that's brought people into us who are interested in things like that, or just interested in Christmas stuff. And it's a way to bring people in. So don't just think about what's the obvious one, like rock band and, you know, your genre or whatever, or, you know, getting real literal, but, think about some other themes that might be in the picture that could draw people in that would ultimately relate to your music, hopefully.
Yeah. And then while we're talking about sort of tagging images, there's also tagging people within the post. There's geolocation information. And both of those could be in this Instagram stories as well. But that's just more ways of grouping content together so it can be found by people who might be, you know, they might not care about your music, but they might care about San Francisco. And, oh, look at that. Tonight you're actually playing in San Francisco, and now they know.
Yep. That, it's like you have my notes in front of you, Chris, because that was my next point. I said don't skip the tag features, but use it wisely. And you can tag brands in the photo. You can tag cities. You can tag all sorts of accounts. For example, I was doing a little testing. And during Christmas, our Christmas tour, there's a few clothing brands I like. And on any given day, chances are I will be wearing one of them. If you know me, you know I like jackets. A lot of them are by a company called G-Star. And so I started on the pictures of me where it was clear I was wearing a G-Star jacket, I started tagging them. And they actually reached out and asked if it was okay to repost it. And I'm like, of course you can repost it.
And you can also send me free clothes.
Yeah. And let's talk endorsements here, because I've spent a pretty penny on your jackets. So that's something to think about. I always tag, like if it's a shot of me or a shot of our keyboard player or a drummer or a bass player, I always tag whatever instrument manufacturer it is that is they are playing. Sometimes you see those being posted by those companies. And also, you know, sometimes people search by that stuff as well. So it's something to think about when tagging. Also the city, people are always doing city searches. And sometimes you get someone in the city who's running a city account to repost it. And using city and hashtags is great too, because people definitely search by, like when we're playing in Atlanta, I always do Atlanta and I do Atlanta music. And so people go, oh, here's another artist in Atlanta. I don't know who they are. Let me follow them. Let me check out their music. So thinking in those those terms are a great way to tap into people that might be interested in what you're doing and are more qualified potential fans than just random hashtag spamming.
Yeah. So the Instagram trick that I alluded to earlier in the episode is for the first time I am posting an Instagram carousel, which is, you know, like in your Instagram feed when you have multiple pictures that you kind of scroll through and you can see below the pictures the little dots that show you how many pictures are in the carousel. I mean, I have posted carousels before, but what I'm doing new is a kind of scripted arc of a story, I suppose. So my new single is called Paper Angels, and I thought, how can I tie that song into broader interest in either angels or songs about angels and my Lyrics in the Limelight playlist? So this carousel is called What is the Number One Song About Angels? And it's basically you scroll through and each picture, that question's on the first carousel. Then each picture after that has two songs. So there end up being 13 and you finally get to number one. And then the last carousel is like, hey, cool. Now that you've gone through this list, go check out the Lyrics in the Limelight playlist. But anyways, the idea is that you want people to keep swiping so that they can get to the nugget of your argument or of your story, or, you know, you plant some mystery. The only way they can solve it is by swiping. The theory behind this is that Instagram benefits when people stay on their platform. That's the whole point of, you know, what they're trying to get people to do. So when a single post is keeping someone, you know, locked into their app for 10 times the amount of time it would take them to engage with a single picture, they love that content more. They might, you know, serve it up in the algorithm higher. And then also, I think just the nature of that kind of content will draw people in through hashtags and stuff that aren't my followers, but might be following angels or like just kind of care about songwriting and lists. You know, everyone likes to argue over top 10 lists type thing. So anyways, that's what I'm trying. So make an Instagram carousel where the answer is, you know, in the eighth or ninth picture.
Like you said, there's lots of evidence that Instagram definitely likes the carousel and content that has more than one photo. And if you can use that to your advantage, like you're talking about, the storytelling element, the way it unfolds, it's not just a bunch of randomness, it'll engage people more, and that post will show up more often in people's feeds because Instagram does not show your content to all your followers. In fact, they just added into the app where you can go see what content you're seeing the most and what content you're not seeing that often by who the people you're following. I forget how they label it, but when you go look at the people that you follow, like you click on the link, it now breaks them up into two columns, and it's interesting to see. It's like some of the people that it put in the side that like I don't interact with because it's based on your interaction. It's like some of that I love their content. It's just what they post. I don't need to do anything.
Right. You just see it and you move on, but you're like, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So
well, once they're locked into our psyche and they're reading our eye scan and our heart rate, once that information is being read by the app, then they've really got us. Then the algorithm will work exactly how you want.
Yep. Agreed. All right. My next tip. And this is more my opinion, but I think we're talking Instagram still, that you should keep your photos in the feed true to the nice photo video vibe of the platform and put the random crap in stories. I don't want to see screenshots come down my feed. That's not why I use Instagram. It's a visual storytelling platform. Don't give me screenshots. Thank goodness we got over the taking pictures of feet years ago. I typically... And this, I might just be an Instagram snob. I will unfollow you if you just, your feed turns into a bunch of screenshots, which I have seen people do, and I have unfollowed them. People that I have perfectly good Facebook friendships with. It's like, that's not why I'm here on Instagram, to see visual spam. So to me, it's like curating nice storytelling. The stories, you can do whatever you want. I think that's what's great about Instagram, is that stories is for that quick hit of just randomness, goofiness, or it could be serious, but it's that quick hit of something that visually maybe isn't as interesting or as anchored in a story, and then the main feed keeping it more story elements.
So I think I completely agree with that, although my question would be, how do you know the difference between shit and something that's worth being archived.
Here's how I would look at it. And this is why I think that the combination of Instagram with the normal feed and stories works so well and completely destroyed Snapchat. And the reason why I never liked Snapchat is because you post stuff and it disappears, but only the people that follow you at that moment can ever see it. So it's like if you don't have any followers, there's nobody looking at anything. You're just putting stuff into nothing. Where with Instagram, there's the main feed is archival. And so the things that I want people to interact with or that inject them into our story as small town poets are things that I think should live on as story pieces or just good photos, cool photos, I put in the main feed. Stuff that it's just like us, like one of the guys asleep in the van or on an airplane drooling all over himself, that goes in stories. That's something that's, and that person drooling all over themselves is probably me. So that stuff's like, that's fun. That's in the moment. That's humanizes us. But that's not something I want someone, you know, 5 years from now who's like, oh, let me check out Small Town Poets and see what they're doing and see a picture of me drooling all over myself. Like, that's not a very nice photo. That's partly how I would determine. Stuff that's in the now that's just like, hey, this is more happening as we speak, that's in stories because it's going to go away in 24 hours.
So what if it's a good picture? So one of
you can put both. You can do it in both.
Well, that's true. So one of my favorite songwriters,
I usually do,
just played a show last night and took a picture of the marquee, and it wasn't all that amazing a photo, but it was, you know, it's had a certain vibe to it, but it was very much of the moment. It's like, hey, I'm playing this place on this date. And is that ever deserving of being in the feed, or should that have gone in stories?
Yes, but I will address that in my don'ts coming up, my list of don'ts that apply to all of social media. But I would say use that photo in both places, but I think you could tailor the post to be like the stories are in the now. The feed, who knows when someone's going to see that image, especially with algorithms. Like if you say, hey, I'm playing here tonight, your fans may not see that till tomorrow.
Right.
The way the algorithm works. And that's what's frustrating about how some of these things have evolved social media, that a lot of the immediacy of them that was so great has gone away. And, you know, it's really weird when the Super Bowl, you know, like I mentioned the Super Bowl, a big event like the Super Bowl happens on a Sunday. By Monday, nobody cares. And you start seeing posts about the, you know, I hope they can come back from this in the second half, the Monday after the Super Bowl. You're like, what the heck? Why does this, you know, it's so outdated now. It's not relevant. And I can't do anything with that, you know.
Mm-hmm. My last two things I was going to say about Instagram have to do with their video components. And I didn't even think of this till just now, but that artist I was just mentioning who posted the photo of the marquee also recently put out a music video and did like the 1 minute video on the feed, the main Instagram feed. And then it gets to the end and it just ends. And I'm like, what the? How do you not have IGTV? And I look, you know, in the little tabs below, it doesn't have IGTV. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're just frustrating me because now I have to like go off the platform to maybe Facebook, maybe YouTube. I don't know where. And if I want it, so I didn't even finish the video. I didn't go elsewhere to finish the video. I was just so shocked that this person didn't have IGTV. It's so simple, people. Just create your IGTV account, link it up. It might even be auto-linked with your regular Instagram profile. And when you post videos, long videos that are more than a minute, post them there. And then there's just a little checkbox that automatically pulls that video into your Instagram feed with the 1 minute, you know, regular time. And if you get to that 1 minute and you want to keep watching, you just press a little button and it loads up in IGTV and, you know, plays on right from where you left off. And it's like, how is it that this person doesn't have this set up? I mean, they're like an artist that I really respect. So.
Yeah. So, well, actually, it works the opposite way now, too. If you have a longer video and you just try to upload it through the normal feed, it'll ask you if you want to push the whole video to IGTV. And what happens is people are watching on your normal feed and it gets to the end and an icon comes up over it and says, you want to finish watching this video on IGTV? And you just click the link and it automatically moves over. Yes, you should have that set up. If you don't, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. And the other video thing I was going to mention is going live on Instagram, which is not something for as much live streaming as I did, particularly last year. I didn't do it on Instagram stories, and I made a mental note of once I kind of get back into my live streaming swing of things, to not do like on Facebook and YouTube. I was doing long concerts, but you know, with Instagram, I might do a song or maybe just a minute of a song and be like, "Hey, I'm about to go live on Facebook or something," but just use the platform for what it's worth, which I've not done, but I plan to. And the benefit is that on Instagram, I'm pretty sure that all or most of your followers still get notified when you go live.
Yeah, they do. A little notification pops down if they're live while you log onto the app, and it's super easy to click on and it goes right to the front of Instagram stories, and I click on it accidentally all the time.
you click on go live accidentally?
Not go live, but the people that are live, it goes to the front of the Instagram story, right. You know, like where all the circles are. So that's a good trick that you might find that you have more success going live on Instagram. Also, that going back to the tip about IGTV, I did notice one of the videos we did recently, it was a video that of us just playing a song live, and it did that. Do you want to have the complete video at IGTV? I noticed that we got some extra likes and some follows off of IGTV. So there's a whole separate algorithm of featuring stuff in there and maybe some new audience that you haven't even tapped into yet. So it's definitely worth making sure that's on.
Yeah.
That reminded
me of one last question I had about Instagram. And that is that in IGTV, you can actually post a clickable link. You know, the URL that you put in there can actually go off the platform, which is different from everywhere else on Instagram. So my question was, what do you think of people posting URLs in post descriptions in their feed or, you know, in an Instagram story if it's not clickable?
It's frustrating in the description because you can't even select it. Like if you could select it and copy it, I would say posting a URL is fine if it's like smalltownpoets.tv is our address. So that's easy to remember. But if it's like smalltownpoets.tv/tour-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, it's like, yeah, come on. And even the short links are hard because they're just random. So it's hard for someone to remember. But most people do the link in bio. Which, right. You know, I saw someone complaining about recently, and that's another tip that wasn't on my list, is that, hey, why don't you go see what link you have linked in your bio, and maybe you should make it more topical and change it out with as you release music. One person was complaining about that. I actually don't mind it because it forces you to put the most relevant link there that may go along with what you're saying at that, you know, over that season of time. It is irritating, but you've already said they don't want people leaving the platform. So why would you give people opportunities to link people out to leave the platform unless they're paying for ads? Then they're happy to let you link anywhere.
Right.
So my last tip is if you have a band account, don't forget to like and interact from your personal accounts. It's a way to get some momentum started. Sometimes you need that first follower to train fans what you want them to do, like if you're trying to get a conversation started in the comments. It's also good if you are a band to have band members interacting from personal accounts. It just makes it more personal. So right now, it's been funny. The last couple of days, I've been posting some new stuff on Instagram, and I'll say something from the band account, and then I go and chime in as, you know, from my personal thing, as if I'm talking to the band, which, you know, it's like, this is pretty sad. I'm just talking to myself on Instagram.
Yeah, but you know what? It goes back. I think you might have actually mentioned this to me at some point, but it's like, what do they call it? When you need social momentum, there needs to be someone that you
first
see
follower, I said.
First
yeah.
follower. That's what, right. You need that person to set the example so the second person doesn't think they're crazy for wanting to do the same thing.
Exactly. And also sometimes you might be asking people to do something and giving, you know, having another thing or like another account, like your personal account, you chime in, it makes them, you know, oh, I get it. They were wanting me to do this. Okay, now I've got an idea. Or, you know, because sometimes your fans may not think as creatively as you want them to. And so you might have to you know, give them a little example. All right. That's all I had for Instagram. Let's move on to Facebook unless you have anything else.
No, that's it.
All right. Facebook. This is what I found with Facebook is that this is my first tip is be conversational and ask questions. People tend to talk more here. Think about a group of people talking at a party with back and forth dialogue, longer thoughts, and blog style posts still work really well here. But man, when I say that, you know, we've posted stuff on Facebook and seen explosions happen, it's been crazy how much dialogue can happen on Facebook and then fans start talking to each other. That really happens a lot on Facebook. And so the idea of like thinking, okay, what can we post here that gets people talking about something, you know, where we're in the mix or we're part of like the conversation starter, but gets them dialoguing about stuff that can relate back to us in some way. And I don't mean that by like them talking about us nonstop, but like, you know, I've said that we have a lot of legacy fans on Facebook. So the idea of like, man, there were so many amazing bands that came out at the same time as us. What were some of your other favorite artists from the 90s? And people just go crazy.
You had that one example you used and you're like, oh my gosh, like our Facebook feed is blowing up right now. And I was like, oh, I should steal that. And I did the same thing. It was, you just asked.
Asked what music platforms they prefer. And
right.
I said.
And if anyone still listens to CDs, right? It was
Or MP3s. Yeah.
It was a real brief.
And that exploded.
Question. And yeah, so I did the same thing and, you know, compared to like recently for this single, I made a bunch of little short videos and they did okay on Instagram, but on Facebook, it was mostly just crickets. Cause I guess Facebook thought they were terrible or that no one cared. But then you post one question, like what streaming platform do you use? And suddenly there's like, you know, all this activity and it makes sense though, because suddenly people get to be included. And they feel involved and that has energy to it as opposed to this sort of one-way communication of like, here's my video saying that a new song's coming out. You should care. You know, it doesn't ask anything of anyone basically.
Yeah. And the cool thing is when people start having those conversations and they feel like there's momentum, then you'll see people start sharing it more like, cause they're like, oh, there's a lot of people weighing in on this thing. What do you think? And they start sharing it. Number two, this is like the biggest, oh my gosh, I never knew this existed moment on Facebook was on posts that have likes and shares. Look at the list of people. You can click on the list of people that have liked it and make sure that they follow your page. If not, click the invite button next to the name. Lots of easy to get followers here. And I did that on that post that we were talking about. And there was another one recently that had a big explosion of activity. And I clicked on that and I was surprised at how many people hadn't followed our page, but somehow saw the post, whether from people sharing it. And you assume if, you know, someone shared your post and somebody who doesn't follow your page liked it, chances are they're going to like your band or your music. So, you know, just click that invite link and it's a great way to just get more followers.
Yeah. So here's an additional hack, one level deeper. If you are really having like, you know, kind of like a viral success with some piece of content, let's say, or if in my case, it was I was spending money to advertise a video to, you know, targeted audiences, but people who had never heard of me before. And I was getting over the course of a few days, like a ton of likes and shares and comments and stuff. And I like literally didn't have the time to keep up with it manually and do those invite things by hand. So there is a Chrome plugin that you can, and I'm spacing what the name of it is now, that you can use to automatically do that. The trick is though, that you have to keep that window up so that Facebook thinks you're doing it manually and the app can't move too fast. So just like, don't close the window, let it do its thing. But it'll save you time and hand cramp from having to do it manually if you're getting like hundreds of likes and comments and shares in the matter of a day.
Yeah, it's a good tip.
Yeah. Although I completely forget what the Chrome plugin is called, but I'm sure it's just a Google search away.
Yeah, that's what Google's for. We don't need to remember anything. That's what Google's for.
Right.
Yeah, so that's one thing, like when you have some success, especially if you see people sharing it, do those things, and it's a good way to pick up fans because they've already interacted with a piece of content. That's why they're there on that list. So it should be an easy follow. One that we've talked about a lot, but it I've done it recently, and it's so obvious that always upload video directly to Facebook. Don't use links to other platforms. Facebook loves video. They only love it to that degree if it's directly on their platform. Again, they don't want people leaving the platform, but also Facebook still has video aspirations. I haven't heard as much about it lately, but they have been making a lot of moves to make themselves more of a destination for people to go and watch video. So they want video to live there natively, and you will see far more engagement with video if it's posted directly.
I don't know did you already mention this? It seems like the flip side of that coin is don't post external links.
Yes.
It'll
as much as you can try. I mean, the thing that wasn't on my list, but now that you say that, here's the tip. When you get something that's working, for example, one of I had this cool picture of us really from our recent tour, it's just total rock and roll moment, and the picture looks amazing. And just randomly, I posted it, and I was trying to think, what do I say? You know, it's easy to get real obvious and just saying dumb stuff. But I just said, that moment when Prophet, Priest, and King really rocks, and that's one of our bigger songs from back in the day. And people went crazy. And you know how they have that little line that shows the engagement line, like where they keep trying to get you to boost it so it gets shown to more people on a post. Mm-hmm. It went completely off the charts on that one, just because just mentioning that song connected to that image. People were just going on and on about how much they love that song. And there was just all this activity around it, which I was really shocked. I was not expecting it at all. And even had a ton of activity on Instagram. It's our most liked photo ever, not even close to the second one. So then when I see all that activity, I started posting links to our music in the comments. And because then everyone who's commented gets notified when you've posted it, like Small Town Poets commented to blah, blah, blah. And so they see that interaction. And then the links, I think Facebook, they're not removing them, but it's in context. And I think you've got an engaged audience there that's interested in something you did. And then, you know, I posted a link to that song on Apple Music and Spotify. And I even might have posted it to Amazon. I don't know. But anyway, that's a good way to try to inject those links to other places into something that's working. Facebook Live will get you right to the top of the feed of fans that happen to be on Facebook. We've talked a lot about this. It also sends notifications, and it doesn't have to be a concert or a performance. Like, you know, when you've got that notification icon at the top of Facebook, if somebody they follow goes live, it'll automatically tell them. And depending on how they have their notifications set for Facebook, it may even pop up on their screen. So there's lots of opportunities with Facebook Live. Facebook loves live video.
Indeed.
And I already talked about using the comment section to interact and post links. And, you know, that again, when you get people interacting, keep the conversation going. Ask follow-up questions. You know, respond to them. Don't just be, the conversation starter and a fly on the wall after that. Jump in. It just builds momentum. And then once you've been having a, you know, good back and forth with people, maybe ask them to share, do something, but don't just leave it sitting there. And then my last tip, or this is kind of a, maybe in the vein of a hack, is for whatever reason, and I cannot figure it out, Facebook absolutely loves it when you change your profile pic. And they show it to an enormous amount of people. I have no idea why.
I have noticed the same, and I don't know why.
And same goes for a video header or just a header image. Any of those things that you change, and you don't want to change it daily, but for whatever reason, you know, when we had somebody working with us doing some management stuff, and he kept changing that image, and I'd get these random notifications of like, all these likes and people that like came out of the woodwork that didn't know we were making music. But I'm like, well, you clearly follow us on Facebook, but why are you're definitely seeing this? I don't understand, but they love that. So do that.
So that leads to something I was thinking about Facebook. When you're talking about sort of customizing your profile in that way by updating your profile pic and having a header video or just a good header image. I think it's important to think about Facebook or your Facebook page as a place where most of your fans are never going to go, like, which might sound depressing, but like, just think about your own experience on Facebook. Like, how often do you proactively go to the page of the artist you like? Probably once.
Never.
You got to do it once to like usually it. To like it. Right. And then after that, it's the artist's responsibility to reach out through good content or ads to hit you again as a fan. So, I mean, that's relieving in one sense because your Facebook page doesn't have to be like a constant party, but it should look good. Like, you should have it kind of, I don't know, optimized for when the person does go there for the very first time so that they're impressed. Because chances are that's the only time they will ever be there. And towards that end, I would make sure if you have a header image or video that it points to some kind of call to action. And, you know, you can choose from a whole bunch of sort of default calls to action, whether it's like your page, get on your email list, buy something, but that's the one time they're going to be there. So get them to act and use the real estate that you have to drive that action. And then I would also say with Facebook more so than some other platforms, like it was very, what's the word, calming. I felt a lot saner when I realized that I don't need to think of Facebook as a social media platform, like in the way where I don't need to constantly feed it content. I can have like trial and error and find some winning bits of content and then use the ad platform or, you know, to sort of broadcast it out and find audiences and stuff. But it took the pressure off me feeling like I needed to post to Facebook twice a day or once a week or whatever. Like, I'm kind of just like, well, I'll post when I have something to say, because ultimately I'm not leaning on it to organically reach an audience all the time. So maybe just a little bit of a adjustment to your mindset about Facebook could be interesting.
Agreed. I only have like one tip related to TikTok because I'm such a new user on it, but you may have a couple more than I do.
Well, I was just going to say we did talk for an hour about it already.
Go listen to that episode.
two episodes ago, I think. So there's about an hour of TikTok stuff. So I might only have one thing to add.
The only thing I want to add or have to say is that hashtags are a must, but don't assume they're used the same as other platforms. Now, that could be true with both, you know, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok that use hashtags. Don't assume that the same hashtags are popular or the same ones are going to work the same way and reach the same audiences. So that's on these platforms that are hashtag driven. That's something you need to be aware of. And it's very clear to me on TikTok that the hashtags that are popular are different.
A question for you. Are you feeling confident enough in your theory about the usage of music to share that one?
You
had your Star Wars video.
Oh, okay. Yes. I feel confident enough in it.
Okay.
So my initial testing on TikTok also revealed that it very much prefers videos that use music that is in the platform. So meaning that and I've tested various things, just some random stuff. And then I did one video that I posted on Instagram a while back and I still had it on my phone. So I'm like, I'm going to test this out. And this video is me just playing this spacey instrumental electric guitar thing of the Star Wars theme song. Did very well on Instagram. And so I thought, oh, I've got this. I'm going to test this out on TikTok. It did not do well at all. In fact, it was several days that it had zero play. No, it had one play. It was you, Chris, because you told me you played. And so it sat, it won. But the weird thing was my very first video that was literally a photo of me that I took of the screen at the airport with all the flights saying on time and one canceled. And mine was the canceled one. And that was my very first TikTok video. And I used a song, one of our songs out of TikTok. And that one randomly got like 750 views. And that was my very first thing, new user, hadn't done anything. And the next couple videos I did got decent amount of people looking at them that use songs. But then I post this one where I played original. I played music that was just in the video, and it sat at zero, at that one, for multiple days. So much so that I finally at work asked multiple people that had TikTok to go watch it, because I wanted to test the theory that to see if one, make sure nothing was wrong. But yeah, when they watched it, the view count went up. But it really seemed like, man, TikTok wants you to use music from the platform as a way to, like, it's part of its DNA. It's pull a song from the catalog, do something to it. We don't care if it's a cooking video, you're dancing to it, you're whatever, just use the music. It seems that they give those videos preferential treatment. That's my theory from my testing. I could be wrong, but that's what it appears to me.
Sounds likely. The only thing I wanted to add to the TikTok discussion is that I have realized in the past week or so that my favorite content on TikTok is all part of a series. And it talked about doing series when we mentioned Twitter earlier, but they're all super short. Well, I guess most video on TikTok is, but I sent you a link to one of them. Did you watch it? The guy who pretends to be God?
I don't think I've seen that.
I sent you a text about it. You should. So it's this guy that he does that thing where he plays two characters that are talking to each other, and one of them is always God, and the other one is either Jesus or an angel. It's like Gabriel or Michael. And the shtick is that it's God inventing or creating different animals. And so he'll be like, Gabriel, do you see that log floating in the river? Give it teeth. Or like put teeth in it or something. And that's like him inventing a crocodile.
Yeah.
Or one was like him inventing mosquitoes. And that one's hilarious. And then like Gabriel's like, are you sure? And he's like, Gabriel, I want this more than anything. Anyways, they're just totally stupid, hilarious God inventing animals. And that is my favorite thing. And then I found another one recently that is the same thing. It's one guy talking. He's playing two characters, and he does these imitations of Obama and Trump in a car together, talking to each other. And his imitations are so perfect, but what they're talking about is so stupid. So anyways, all that to say, if you can stumble onto some kind of theme that you can pull off in a, you know, day after day or week after week or whatever that is related to your music, I think it's tougher to do once it leaves the comedy realm, but I think it's still possible. So that would be my trick. Keep trying to think of some theme that excites you to, you know, keep making content in that mode.
Yeah, my last tip for TikTok is experiment. The one thing I've noticed is that the platform, it's perfectly okay to be random right now. You know, that's in our TikTok episode, we talked about how YouTube started that way, but then YouTube very much morphed over time into a thing where your channel must be a specific theme and we want you to operate a specific way in order to see success on the platform. Right now, I think TikTok is easy to experiment and go, that worked, that didn't, let's move on, you know, and you might find something that works. And there's some other features in there that we discussed in the TikTok episode that, help you tap into some audiences that are worth, you know, checking that episode out. But if you have some more tips and tricks and are discovering things on TikTok, feel free to send them in. All right. I've got a list of don'ts.
Okay.
These are things that I've seen happen a lot, maybe sometimes in my own band, but these are the don'ts. Don't use all your content in one upload. So if you're at the studio and you're getting a bunch of photos and cool video and stuff, don't feel like you have to upload it all that day. You don't even have to use any of it that day. Nobody knows when you're in the studio, and they don't care if the photo they see, this cool photo of you in the studio, actually happened 2 weeks ago. Nobody knows that when you're actually there. So not that you shouldn't or can't post stuff while you're in the studio, but don't feel this connection to reality that all the content must be posted when it actually happened. That's not the case. So, and why I say that is because so many people get stressed out thinking, oh, we're in the studio, we got to post this stuff. And then they just throw it up there and they waste a lot of strategic possibilities with it, or ways to use it better or make it go further. So don't feel like you have to do that. I think that's all I have to say on that. Don't talk about yourself in the third person. Please don't do that. I actually just recently, one of my other band members, I don't know if they even noticed that I changed the post on Instagram, but they posted a photo of all of us crammed into this backstage room that, you know, it was like we're all sitting on top of each other practically because it was almost like a closet, but it was like an actual dressing room with all the mirrored lights with around the mirrors and stuff. And it said something about like the guys crammed into the back room, like who's posting this? So I changed it, got rid of the guys. And then there was another thing I changed that was related to one of my other don'ts. Don't constantly refer to something as happening in the past or overuse time references. Use time sparingly. So that same post I edited referenced the show being like 3 days ago or last week. And I got rid of that and said a recent show. The idea being that you don't know when someone's going to see that photo, and you might have periods of time where you have less content to post online, and you don't want people who stumble across your account or start following you to feel like, oh my gosh, everything on here is like from 2 years ago, or, you know, it's always talking about something that happened in the past. It's not about the story being unfolding. So to me, it's about always making it look like the story is unfolding and talking about things in a way that don't feel like everything is about something that did happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's one of those things like where that plays into. It's like if you go to the Small Town Poets Instagram feed, you will see a lot of photos that happened in December. A lot of ones that are some cool concert photos. They were all from the same show. I dripped them out over the course of like 3 weeks. I'm still using some of them. People thought we were on tour for like a month and a half from that one show. And I didn't keep saying another picture from our show in Jacksonville, because it was the Jacksonville show. It had amazing lights. And like, I didn't keep saying another picture from Jacksonville. Yeah, it's like I just came up with things that were unrelated to the time and place, because that's irrelevant a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be too literal with descriptions. They can see what it is. Your comment doesn't have to relate to what's in the image. For whatever reason, this always comes up when, I don't know what it is, and I see other bands doing this too, but why do we have such a hard time writing a caption for a picture with the bass player in it? It always ends up being like, Miguel bringing the low end, or, you know, something like that.
I think I'm guilty of that too. I think it's just like, ooh, that's a cool picture, I want to share it. What can I say? I don't have any idea. It's Miguel bringing the low end. So
yeah,
there it is. You're just excited about the picture, so you don't come up with anything else.
But it always happens with the bass player. I've seen it on other people's feeds. It's like, we have to mention the low end. But so I had a picture, and that was like, I can't do that. I'm like, so this picture with Miguel, it's got orange lights. And I thought, one thing that's interesting with social media is like that, you know, there's this story that you could be going on, like the band has this inner dialogue that fans just don't often get a glimpse into. So for that one, I just posted, we discussed it as a band and decided Miguel looks really good in orange light, in any light, really. So instead of just saying, there he is under concert lights, it's almost like, hey, we really like the way Miguel looks in this photo. That was just a different take on it. And so sometimes it's just those simple things that it turns it into more of a story piece, as opposed to being Captain Obvious of like, here's the bass player playing a bass. Of course the bass player is playing a bass. I can see the picture. Don't overlook other obvious storylines that might draw from the broader artist or band story. I'm trying to think of some examples of that. Well, here's one. I had this picture of me that I posted on the band account. It's me with my green Les Paul. My green Les Paul. How I love it. And I wrote, it's rare to catch Kevin on stage playing a guitar other than his green Les Paul classic, which is pictured here. However, our latest single, Try, features the Fender Stratocaster, even on the solo, which is making its way a lot more into our new songs. So, and then I put, check out the Try link in the bio kind of thing. So it's like, here's a picture of someone playing a guitar, but hey, did you know that our latest song, it actually features a Stratocaster, and he has other guitars and plays them a lot. And so just trying to think, how can I draw in a story element of like the broader picture of what we're doing and Of course, I used a lot of guitar hashtags on that one, which got a lot of traction. Another one is, don't give info that ruins the illusion.
Ooh, what does that mean? That intrigues me. I'm curious.
Well, after, you know, we had just had a lot of good momentum happening on social media and people getting excited about music, and clearly new people were being drawn in by just some of the activity and how we were using the platforms. Danny, our keyboard player, texted me and says, I've got this minute-long video of we played this event, but all you can see in the video is Michael, and there's like this video wall behind him, and it's him singing Where the Streets Have No Name. And it's Michael, and it looks good, and it's a great sounding recording of Where the Streets Have No Name. And I said, yeah, we'll post it. And I said, but don't post it saying, here's Michael and a bunch of other guys playing Where the Streets Have No Name, because you can't see the other guys. And so I posted the video, and I said something about, we love U2. What other U2 songs would you love to hear us cover? And so I took a piece of content that wasn't even Small Town Poets, but two of the guys are playing, and I used it. And so by not ruining the illusion, I mean like explaining away, well, it's only some of the guys. It's like, they don't need to know that. It's Michael singing Where the Streets Have No Name. And the best part is they think all those sweet U2 guitar tones are me. And but I think so oftentimes we feel like we have to go, well, here's a something. It's not really all of us. It's like, who cares? All they see is the front man of the band and a band backing them that they can't see playing some music, and it works. And don't necessarily have to, again, it was about, we love you too. I didn't say, here's all of us playing this song. I said, we love you too. What other U2 songs would you love to hear us cover? And it worked really well. And it was a conversation starter. And so we got all these recommendations and things like that. So that's what I mean, like, don't ruin the illusion. It's like, there might be something in the picture. There might be things happening outside of the lens, or with the lens captured outside of the frame. You don't need to tell them if it's something that, you know, it's a trick. It's about telling a story. It's not about going,
see,
you know,
this is why we're marketers. It's all about the spin.
Spin. That's right. And the last don't I have is, don't forget that your audience might be in a different time zone than you, or different time zones, because you might find that, you know, the best time for you to post stuff is not when you're going to get better interaction. So it's good to test things at different times during the day. You know, you can look online and there'll be marketing websites that'll say, this is the best time to do this or that. And it depends, you know, it depends who you're audiences and where they're at. You know, a lot of those articles are written like assuming your audience is in the same time zone. And, you know, there might be cultural differences that aren't accounted for either. So trying out different times to post stuff, you might see that you're tapping into different audiences.
Yeah, that one I notice. I mean, even within the United States, there's a 3-hour difference between the East and the West Coast. And so a lot of folks that follow me on Instagram are in Oregon and California. And so for me, I could be midnight where I'm at. And if I have something I want to post on Instagram, I think conventional wisdom would be like, no, don't post something at midnight. No one's going to see that. But actually I'm like, no, actually that's a good time for me to post. Cause when I do that, I tend to get a lot of like early energy from folks on the West Coast, which is nice.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say that has been really working for us, and this may be, you know, your mileage may vary, is posting a nice photo and just a line from a lyric. You know, the photo may connect to the emotion in the line of the song, but like I've been, you know, scouring through everything I have to, you know, keep this content train going. And I found some photos from a show last year that I hadn't posted. And I posted one of the images, and I just posted a line from one of our more popular songs. What is happening in the photo is not that song. It doesn't matter. It's just a cool photo. And I've been having a lot of success with doing that and getting lots of people weighing in. Oh, I love that song. Or that's like one of my favorite all-time songs. And then them dialoguing about that song. I've also used lyrics as like, there was this ridiculous photo I posted where we tried this light effect and it looks stupid. It's on Instagram. You can see it. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But I said, which song lyric from a Small Town Poets song best describes this photo? And I gave two options. And I said, or something else, or, you know, say something to make or write your own caption to amuse us all. And people really went deep on our lyrics and found a bunch of references that worked with that photo that I hadn't thought of. And so those were, again, were just ways to think of getting people interacting with the music. There's a visual that is us or related to us or something we're doing in the story, but it's not being so literal of like, this is us looking stupid at a parking lot in Orlando at 10 o'clock at night, waving lights around, which that probably would have been perfectly good for that photo too.
Yeah, that actually sounds like a good description.
Yeah. So those are a bunch of social media tips, a lot from us experimenting. And anything else, Chris, to add before we go into some calls and emails?
No, I think we just gave a lot of tips.
All right. If you've got some tips that you'd like to share, you can call us at our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And let's get into some phone calls. Here is the first one.
Hey, Kevin and Chris, what's up? This is Jeff Iftikharuddin calling from San Francisco, California. I just finished up episode 246. Huge fan of the podcast. Super awesomely helpful info. I wanted to share my biggest mistake that I can think of. I have a very long last name. My dad is from India. It's Iftikharuddin, and that's been a problem since, well, for as long as I can remember. And I went through a phase where I was thinking that that name had a lot to do with why I wasn't finding the success that I thought I would be at in my career. And so I changed it to Jeff Everest. And I went and I was playing a show in New York, and I was talking to the club owner before the show, and he said, is that your real last name? And that was the very first show I'd ever performed under that name. And that was the last time that I did that. So I've learned to embrace my last name. It's who I am. And I don't feel that that has anything to do with whether or not I'll find success or have more streams. Thanks again for all the awesome content that you and Chris are putting out there. You can check me out at Permission to Fly all over the socials. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for that call. I had mixed feelings about this call because he changed it and he felt like it was the right thing to do. And then one person says, that's really your last name. And he bolts from it. That was my only troublesome thought was that, man, if that's the way you wanted to go, it's going to take some time for it to sink in and it feel real to you and for people to buy in. But also, he felt like he wasn't being true to himself. So I totally get that. So that I totally get that part.
On the one hand, if he felt like the Everest last, that's what it was, right? Everest.
Yes.
If that was really going to be the moniker to and the sort of persona to step into, then yeah, you should give it more time. But I think I'm going with your latter comment, which is that if one person questioned it and you felt that uncomfortable about it and you changed it back, it probably means you were uncomfortable with it to begin with. And why not be yourself? And I also think, like, I don't know, we live in an age where there's just so many musicians. And so just like, we might be in a time where like the more sort of, I don't know, it's unusual the name is in a Western American market. Like that might be a good thing.
Not being able to see it and not, you know, seeing it spelled out in front of me. Only being able to go on how he said it over, you know, the phone calls aren't the clearest audio. It didn't feel like it was something that was too hard to say. But, you know, I think it's sometimes, you know, the way I was thinking this about politics, because we have in America right now, multiple people running for president where I look at their last name. I'm like, I have no idea how this is pronounced. I think
I
you could
know how to say Mayor Pete's name correctly.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what? It would be genius and they'll never do it because they try to play so vanilla in politics. But it would be genius if somebody just did this funny jingle about how to pronounce their last name, and it got stuck in everybody's head, and they just vote for him because they like the song. But I thought, that's what artists with tough last names, just make a little jingle, so then you, or a little catchphrase of how you say it, and teach your fans and people that it shows, and then it becomes a hook, and it gets stuck in their head, and then they won't have a hard time saying it. But, you know, I have seen multiple artists go through this where they felt like their name was hard to say and they changed their name. And it does take a little bit for you to buy into it. So if you do go through that, it will feel weird having people call you something slightly different for a while. It worked out okay for John Bon Jovi.
Totally. I got a Christmas card from a listener with a very short question that is kind of on this topic. So I wonder if I can just inject it. So this is from Ben Brinton, who I think is from Utah. And the question is, are there specific pros and cons when using your actual name as your artist name? Would you advise a nom de plume or a moniker? So it seems relevant to this conversation we're already having.
Yeah.
So I guess an obvious con would be if the name is really, really difficult to pronounce. Another thing is that you have to present yourself. You're kind of stuck with your name also representing all the music you've made. And if you grow embarrassed by that music or you have some artistic shift, it's like, well, you've already pegged that catalog to who you are as a person, which might seem like a big burden to bear. I mean, hopefully you're just putting out music you're proud of and you're not going to change your mind about that, even if you slightly change. I also think my last con, I guess, is that band names are pretty cool when they're good. And, you know, if it's just Chris Robley or Ben Brinton versus like a really awesome band name that has all this, you know, that really evokes and paints a picture, then you're missing out on that too. But I don't know. For a lot of reasons, I'm still happy that I went with just my name.
We've had some people that, based on their profession, didn't want their music career to mix with their professional career of, you know, their day job, I'll say, because, you know, music might be their professional career as well, but they just didn't want those two worlds to mix. So sometimes based on what that is, you might want a moniker or a different name for what you're doing music under. It just depends. I think, like you said, it's something that you're going to need to live with. If it's something you can see it being there for the long haul, then fine. If it's like something you're just feeling right now, today, but not aren't really convinced, then you might not go that route.
All right.
All right. This is a licensing question. Hopefully we can answer it.
Hey, Kevin and Chris. This is John Henry Sherr. Thank you for everything you do. Big fan of the podcast. I was happy to get a chance to hang out with both of you in Austin last summer. I've got my ticket for the 2020 conference in Austin as well. Okay, so here goes. I'd love an answer to as many of these as you can. Covers and public domain. One, what is the process for releasing a cover or covers on an album mixed with originals? Is there any particular process at all? Two, what is the process of releasing a cover album? Is it securing licenses one by one through a site such as Louder? And then distributing through CD Baby. For example, I may like to put out an album of my acoustic version of several heavy metal classics, which I recorded many years ago, but never officially released. Three, can I use previously released singles on a new album? For example, I've already released two acoustic metal songs as singles. I'd like to include those same tracks on any related album I'd release in the future. Can I use the same license and ISRC I've already secured for the single and apply them to an album? Four, what is the process for releasing a public domain covers, an album mixed with originals? Is there any process at all? Can we just put it on there as long as we know it's public domain? Five, any special tips on figuring out if a song is really public domain or not? All right, that was a mouthful. Thanks so much for everything you do. Take care.
Thanks for the call, John. Lots of questions there. I hope I remember them all. First off, the last one you mentioned about public domain, I know there's a website called pdinfo.org.
Sounds right.
that has a database of public domain songs. In the event that you are releasing a public domain song, you can do whatever you want with that song. And when you release it, you just, when you're uploading it, you just put in public domain. So we know that there aren't songwriter requirements for that and publishing requirements. If you need to license a track, we recommend Easy Song Licensing. Louder doesn't exist anymore. So Easy Song Licensing is what we recommend. And here's the trick. If you are releasing an album or singles with cover songs on them, and all you are doing is releasing it to streaming platforms, you just need to get the publisher info and the songwriter info and put that information in when you upload the tracks, because the streaming platforms pay the publishers. However, that's only if it's just going to streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon. If it is going to be made into CDs, going anywhere the downloads will be sold, you absolutely must secure the license, and Easy Song Licensing can help you do that. And that way you will pay money, because the services will not pay for any CD sales or downloads that for those licensing fees. Doesn't matter if you have an album or a single, you can go to Easy Song Licensing and handle the cover songs. And if a cover song has been out before, I know that you can't just port over a license, that if you had a license for a single and paid so much for downloads, you just can't apply that to the album. It's a different project. Easy Song Licensing will help you out. They'll have all the details.
The answers.
We're just humble marketing guys. The answer is always yes if you ask a marketing guy.
Right. My suspicion is it will be a quick answer from them, from Easy Song Licensing, and it'll be simple to do.
Correct. All right. I'm going to go to an email. Howdy, guys. I've been working with CD Baby for the past 2 years. I've really enjoyed all the support and mentorship that I've received over the years. I wanted to reach out to you to ask a few questions. How can I organically increase my social media following? So the rest of this episode hopefully gave him some tips on that one. Number two, I've done geo-targeting campaigns, playlist push, and other social media shares for Spotify, but have still continued to struggle maintaining Spotify streams. Any suggestions? And then his last question is, what can I do to market myself as an artist? Hope to hear from you soon, Trey Gonzalez. A good question about how to maintain Spotify streams. I've seen that same struggle with our stuff. And for an independent artist that's still trying to build an audience, to me, the answer is release more music.
Yep. Well, that's one of the only things, not one of the only things, but it's one of the easier things that you can control. I also, before you go deeper into that question, though, there's one cautionary thing, and that is that I feel like there has been just a huge focus on Spotify metrics, and that there's all these ways to boost your Spotify metrics, but then eventually they're going to sync, and then you boost them again through some trick, and then they sync, and then you do some cool playlist stuff, and they go up, and then they go down. But like, what that ultimately, I think, points to for me is that people are focused on Spotify rather than focusing on having fans or you know, getting fans interested or whatever. Like, it points to a focus on the platform as opposed to the audience. That would be my one vague caveat before we answer the question.
That's a good point, because first off, your fans may not be on Spotify. Newsflash, there's lots of other platforms out there and people are using them. I know that a lot of people talk about Spotify, but that earlier on in this episode, when we were talking about the question I asked of our fans, what music platforms they were using, a surprising number of Amazon users, large number of Amazon users. In fact, in that thread, I think Amazon outweighed Spotify. It wasn't a scientific poll of our fans at all. But that's just something that maybe your fans aren't there. So you need to be looking at other platforms to make sure that your real fans are where you think they are. But releasing music, why I say releasing music is in the situation he's in, is probably the best way is every time you release new music, the people that are following you, and if you use the release tool, like set up your release through us and have it ready to go and uploaded to Spotify, delivered to Spotify more than 7 days in advance, you have access to that release tool where you can add more information, and they will push it to everyone who follows you in their release radar. This is something that they started doing about 6 months ago, where before that, your fans might get it, but now they absolutely do get it. So that's something that releasing more music gets you back in front of your fans. And it's, you know, building that engagement. It's like, oh, I liked that one song 2 months ago, or the one that they released 6 months ago. There's only so much I can listen to that. Eventually, I'm going to need new music, or I'm going to move on. And so that's something that artists should definitely be using to their advantage. And a lot of these platforms push new music to their followers, and with Discover Weekly, Release Radar, there's a daily picks type playlist. And so some of those things are just opportunity if you have new music. All right, let's see. I've got another call. A call about targeting audiences.
Hey guys, my name is Avision. That's A-V-Y-Z-A-O-N. And I'm a hip-hop artist slash producer. I had a couple questions, actually. Trying to figure out, how can I get on more Spotify playlists? It's not a problem, but it's just trying to figure out, how can I increase my awareness? And then the actual question I had was trying to do shows. And when I'm looking at my Spotify analytics, the cities and locations are very spread out. So I'm trying to figure out, what services can I use to target specific areas when music is released? You know, like, I'm from Wyoming and Colorado's 30 minutes away, and I was hoping you could tell me a service or a couple of services that could help me target that area when I need to, so I can do more shows or feel more ready to do shows. Thanks, you guys. I've actually listened to you guys for the last 6 months, and I've started from episode one, so I'm all caught up, and you guys have a happy new year. Thanks.
Wow, he started from episode one.
There's been quite a few of those folks lately that have recently all listened to every episode.
I hope they notice what year it came out, because they're going to be like, these guys are idiots.
We were just joking
about talking about MySpace.
Yeah, we were just joking about this. I'm always talking about Arcade Fire and MySpace.
There are several tools I would recommend if you have new music and you're targeting a specific place. And that is a good thing to be doing. Like he said, he's in Wyoming. There's not a lot of population in Wyoming, so probably going to have to target other places if you want to play shows. He's looking at Denver. You know, you can target Denver with Facebook ads. You can also use our show.co ad builder platform to target people in the Denver and Colorado area. I would recommend those. They're tailored. The show.co ad builder platform is definitely tailored for music.
And to clarify that one, you could do audio ads on Spotify and platforms like iHeartRadio that are geo-targeted. And then there's another component for banner ads.
Then Facebook, it's easy to target people in a specific city at an affordable price. So I would recommend those two to start. And I'd also recommend it, you scour the Denver area for other hip hop acts and see if there's anybody that you can convince to let you open for them. Don't just randomly call them up and beg to open for them. But, you know, that would be a good way to get on a bill with somebody in that scene and start building relationships there. Because at some point, you're going to need to build some relationships with people in the local scene in order to get you some gigs. And that's always a good way to try that.
For the first part of the question, which was about getting on more Spotify playlists, I assume he's heard our two episodes on that topic.
If the he's truth listened to about them all. Spotify playlists, part one and two.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that has recently changed about our advice is that Spotify no longer shows you the, what is it called? So in the about page of an artist's profile, you can see the top five, I believe, playlists they appear on, but they've removed the play counts or the stream counts that are generated through that placement, which, I mean, maybe prevents us having as good a window into how useful a placement is. But it's the steps we outlined in those episodes are basically still completely valid for finding playlists to pitch to. And then I would say make a spreadsheet, get to work and write a whole lot of people and expect to be told no 8 times out of 10. Or not even no, just ignored.
I found that I got ignored less than I thought I would. I was preparing myself for utter rejection and I received just mild indifference.
That's really encouraging. So expect mild indifference 5 out of 10 times.
That's better than just complete rejection. Mm-hmm. You got to look at it. The glass is half full, Chris. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play one more call. We've talked for a while. I'm not bored yet, so I'm hoping no one else is. But I'm going to play one more call. It's a quicker one, and it's just a simple question. So here we go.
Hi, Kevin and Chris. My name is Laura, calling in. I've been binging your podcast pretty much all winter. I love it. I heard you say you don't have a lot of women calling in, so here I am. I am a children's musician as a career in Chicago. Just wondering if the DIY conference is going to be coming back around to Chicago. I'm sad that I missed when it was here a couple years ago. Thinking about going to Austin. It's a little toasty there in August. Anyway, just wondering if you think it's going to come back to Chicago. I might just hold out and wait for that since I am right here. Okay, thanks so much. Love what you guys do. And look forward to listening to more episodes.
Thanks for the call, Laura. You're in Chicago. Austin should sound amazing to you right now. It's warm and toasty. You're probably freezing in Chicago in winter. We do not have plans to come back to Chicago at this point. I do know where we will be in 21 and 22. I am not going to say yet. It'll be a surprise. All I can say is that I know for sure, 100%, is that we are doing the conference this year in Austin. Beyond that, who knows what'll happen? We do know where we think we're going. Assuming the world doesn't come unhinged before then, we are doing it in Austin this year. And so please come. You should come to Austin. Yeah, so Austin, August 28th through the 30th, and it'll be a good time. And it will be warm and toasty, but I like it warm and toasty.
Yeah, and 75% of the day we'll be inside a building that you'll probably think is too cold.
Yeah. That's the thing about these places. It's like people say, it's really hot. I'm like, you're going to spend 75% of your time inside a hotel that is freezing cold. So
to dress warm.
Yeah, it's just so maybe you should bring a jacket. I keep saying you won't need a jacket when you go outside, but maybe you will inside. But yeah, it'll be in August. Chicago was fun. Actually, randomly this week saw a picture of our conference there from year two in Chicago. It was good. It was a great place to kick off the conference. And, you know, we've sort of created this pattern. I don't know if it was intentional or just by accident of moving to a new location every couple years. And it's happened that way for one reason or another. And it looks like we will move again in 21 and 22. But we'll see. I don't think I've actually signed any papers yet. So... we'll see what happens. Yes, but thanks for the call and another binger, somebody who's binged the whole podcast. That's
brave
interesting.
Souls.
If you'd like to call our listener line, you can do so at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And, you know, if you're still listening at this point in the podcast, this is a long one, Chris. We haven't had a long one like this in a long time, but
yeah,
maybe it's because I had multiple energy drinks before I started.
That's not good for you.
Yes, so we've got more podcasts on the way, and Chris, you'll be here in Portland next week. I'm looking forward to that, so we'll have the next episode after this one. We'll be us in the same room here at the studio, the green room, as it's called, here at CD Baby HQ in Portland, and that'll be a good time. And lots more stuff on the way. We'll catch you later.
See you next week.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.